Hello, friends. Greg Kokel here on Stand to Reason, and I am just like totally amped right now because we got some numbers in during our staff meeting about how we're starting off our reality season. And of course, you guys know that our reality strategy are these conferences that we do all over the country. And this season, we boxed the compass. I mean, we've got six different events that circled our good country, and now includes the Northeast, which we had not had in the past. But we launch our reality series, which is geared for passing the baton to the young people. You know, a lot of concern about kids losing their faith in college. They don't lose it in college, friends. They lose it in high school and even junior high. And this is why we have developed over the last, 9 years? I heard it was like this is our eighth year. It's hard to believe. It seems like it's been going on for 15. But this is either our eighth or our ninth year. But we've really catapulted into a powerful enterprise of focusing in on middle schoolers and high schoolers to pass the baton, give them the rich stuff, the good stuff from our best communicators and our best research, but also making it kind of fun at the same time. In a conference that's all Friday evening and all day Saturday that is really meant to educate, equip, and then fire them up to go out and engage the culture with the claims of Christ and answer the challenges. So that's what our whole reality thing is about. And the numbers I just got, last year, or 2020, we got aced out of Orange County. So we had no event in Orange County. We did in Minneapolis. We opened up the Pacific Northwest in Seattle. And so we've got those happening this fall as well. But I think we lost our Southeast program last year too. But this year we'll be meeting in Augusta, Georgia. But I'm just saying September, okay? So we've got an early bird for Orange County. You can sign up early in Orange County, and I'm just saying, you should. The early bird ends August 1st. That's Monday coming up, all right? And the reason that you should is because last time we had Orange County, at this stage of the game, we had 485 people signed up. But by the end of that week, by the end of early bird, this last week of early bird, we had almost 1,400 students signed up like 9 weeks in advance, or that would have been 8 weeks by now. Still. But when I look at the surge there at the end and I look at our current numbers, we have almost 700 people signed up right now in early bird. And if we surge at the same rate, we will be pushing close to 2,000 people. That's right, 2,000 people by the early bird date next week, and that fills up the main auditorium at Calvary Chapel in Costa Mesa. This is why I'm pumped. We are rocking and rolling on this, and it's like these young people are chomping at the bit, man, maybe because they missed last year. But they want to get out and get at it, and we have an unbelievable lineup for you, as we do every single year. The theme for this year is chaos to clarity, because we know that the young people, whether you're listening or whether you're the parents of young people or the grandparents of young people, we know that they are facing absolute chaos in the culture right now. And this is one thing that I've been trying to speak through in the last few months, actually this entire year, in the Solid Grounds that go out. And if you haven't read the Solid Grounds, please just sign up. And if you sign, you go to str.org and sign up for our regular stuff, our training material we send out every month. And alternating months, they're either mentoring letters or Solid Grounds. But the Solid Grounds start at the first of the year. And if you haven't read them, I want you to read them, because these things are talking about what's happening. There is a progression of events that do not bode well for your freedom as a Christian and the freedom that you have to speak the truth to the culture. And I'm just giving you a warning and some tools to help you understand what's going on so that you can, as Paul says in Ephesians 6, just read it today, that be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Okay, that's what we're all about here. And so I've been writing these pieces and making them available to you. But you know the challenges that we have, and especially the ones that the young people are facing in a whole host of areas. And this particular series, From Chaos to Clarity, starting in September and going through the spring, at our different locations all over the country, is meant to provide some fabulous training, insight, perspective, encouragement, foundation for your young person. When I say that young people, you know, middle schoolers and high schoolers, look, we got younger folk that come and get a lot out of it. And we got older folk, too. You know, so I frequently say, we're not checking IDs, and the whole youth group show up, and so do the parents and the grandparents. So, but I'm just saying, come Monday, this Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa can hold 2,000 people in the main auditorium. Now, we got overflow areas, but if you sign up after the 2,000, you get the overflow, you don't get the main auditorium. It's still pretty cool. You're watching a screen. It's great. But just want to encourage you to sign up early so you can get into the main auditorium, all right? And certainly secure your place, because at some point we're going to have to say no even to the overflow. And it is very likely that we are going to have to shut down registrations before we have the event. The event is in 9 weeks, all right? It's September 24th and 25th. And Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa. We draw people from all over the country, particularly from our area, 15 states roughly from around here, roughly bordering. But we also have coming up October 15th and 16th in Seattle. We're going to be in Minneapolis, St. Paul again at Grace Church, Eden Prairie, November 12th and 13th. And even with COVID, we had 1,300 people show up there. Without COVID, we're going to blast right through our numbers. The first year, it was just, I think it was 2,400 students before we got limited by COVID. We're also going to be in Dallas on the February 25th and 26th, and opening up in Augusta, that city, April 22nd, 23rd. But in March, right between those two, Philly will be in Philadelphia area, 25th and 26th. So we're just absolutely thrilled to be able to watch what God's doing. I mean, it's just very cool, all right? But I'm telling you, if you want to get into the main auditorium, you better act quickly. You also get the early bird. So if you go to realityapologetics.com, I think that's the site, realityapologetics.com. It'll give you all the skinny on all the sites, and you can sign up now, save some money, by August 1st, Monday, and be part of the Southern California event. And of course, you can sign up afterwards, you know, but you run the risk of being assigned to an outside venue. Get all the workshops and everything, but you know, you're just going to be scooted off to the side a little bit. I want you to be in the main event here. But what we've been doing here, and actually my intent over the next, say, 9 weeks, I'll be featuring some of our absolutely fabulous team of speakers who will be training the young people, you or your young people, whoever's listening here, passing the baton to them. And first on board today is the fabulous Megan Allman. And she is one of Scott Klusendorf's amazing team at Life Training Institute, been there since 2009, and is a regular speaker also at Summit, along with her husband, Tripp. And Tripp is going to be also part of the faculty. I just found out she was a champion gymnast, too, maybe in a former life, the way it feels to her right now, at the University of Georgia. Megan, I feel kind of like you're a little bit of a spiritual grandchild to me, because you've been tutored by a former SDR speaker, Scott Klusendorf, for many years. And Scott's was on our team for quite a number of years. One of the most magnificent guys I know, and he is producing a fabulous team of which you are a member. It's what a treat to have you on board today.
Yeah, I am so excited to be both on the show and coming to reality. This is a dream come true for me, so I'm thrilled.
Yeah, I just realized this is the first, I don't know how you slipped by, but this is the first time we've had you on board with something, you know. Mm-hmm. So you and I have done events with Craig Hazen before, and memorably, as I recall, a couple years ago, and we had a fun time kind of afterwards in a strange place where we were trying to get food that didn't exist.
Right.
And, that was a weird thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was some warm over thing sitting in the side that maybe somebody's Ooh. Leftovers, I don't know. That was kind of a crazy evening.
I wasn't going near that, but I remember it.
And but you look at what you do for Scott, LTI, Life Training Institute. You speak everywhere. You speak to high schools. You speak at universities. You have a finger on the pulse of the younger generation, in a way I certainly don't have. And all of your work with Trip over at Summit, in Colorado Springs, and also their satellite schools. Tell me, I mean, how critical is it from your perspective to be passing the baton early to our young people?
Yeah, I think it is, of course, hugely critical. I love that when we speak at Summit, or when Scott speaks at Summit, and thank you for the kind words about him, I agree, he's just the real deal. Summit puts us on the first day of their 12-day student conferences. And I think they do that intentionally, and because they understand if we're going to be sharing the gospel with the world around us and learning these ways to pave potholes, and, you know, as apologetics does, mm-hmm. That's going to be really hard to do in a world that has forgotten what it means to be human and valuable, which is really the mm-hmm. crux of what we talk about. So for these students, if they're not understanding that, then they're in big trouble already. And I think that mm-hmm. our conversations in apologetics as they go right now, you know, for the longest time, the questions have been there about who is God? How did mm-hmm. we get here? And we're still answering those questions. But more than ever before, I think, or I feel like when I'm out there, people are wrestling over the question of what it even means to be human right now.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm so glad you brought that up, and this isn't in my notes at all, but it triggers some thoughts that I wanted to touch base with you on. One of the biggest things right now is the whole transgender issue, and you know, I think of the people that the terrible struggle it is for people who are experiencing mm-hmm. this dysphoria, and beyond that, this sense of being broken and trying to repair it. And the culture is telling them, your body is broken, not your mind, you know? And so let's fix your body. Your body's the wrong body. And so there's an attempt to try to change that. But it just strikes me that people in this situation, I think of Bruce Jenner, for example, and I don't mean this disrespectfully or insensitively, but Bruce Jenner will be a broken person his whole life. He will never be unified. And it's because just what you mentioned, they don't understand what it means to be a real human being. And when I say real, I mean not that they're not genuine people, but they're not understanding how God made them to be. And insofar as we live outside of that, we are living in a lie that causes a breakage in us that can never be satisfying. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It makes absolute sense. And I mean, really, I think the issues are related, not just in terms of them both dealing with sexual ethics in some way, but just with this very idea that we are embodied beings living in a world right now that thinks for the most part the body is somehow less than, that you can do to and with your body whatever you want to do, and it doesn't really affect you. And so we're seeing mm-hmm. this play out because, as we teach at Summit and elsewhere all the time, ideas have consequences. I mean, I learned that from you first, Greg. And it's so true. And when, as long as this is the ideas that are permeating, you know, people's thoughts and minds, the longer they'll continue to live in this kind of disembodied state, as it were, when right, Christianity right. never, ever separated the two, the body mm-hmm. from the soul.
Well, right at the, as you pointed out, right at the core of the whole pro-life question, and it is the question of what does it mean to be human? And this point, this demonstrates that this issue, and this is the point you're making, Megan, is not some kind of isolated thing that certain people, yeah, that's their thing. Oh, that's a Klusendorf thing, you know, that's an Allman thing, you know. I'm glad we got them around, but, you know, that's that they're kind of off in the side deal. It's not a side deal. It's front and center. The broad issue is front and center, and it has ramifications for the abortion question, but it has ramifications for all kinds of other things as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think when I try to set it up for students and they'll hear this at Reality, they'll hear it more and deeper than we can go here and now, but there is this one mm-hmm. idea that kind of runs right beneath the abortion issue and also beneath many of the injustices that we're facing. We just tend to talk about abortion differently. And for reasons that you know well, it's trying to make it more of this kind of that's your truth type of idea when it comes to this one. But that idea is that somehow we've adopted that some human beings matter more than other human beings. Not a new idea. It's been around for a really long time. But it's manifesting in a way that's...
Well, that's interesting, you know, because it sounds to me like you're making like a little side reference to the whole racial justice issue, because that is a problem, obviously, the issue. And the issue of, that you just identified, that some human beings are better than others. But this is precisely what plays out in the abortion issue. One human in the womb is not as valuable as another human who is not in the womb, or other humans not in the womb that may be inconvenienced in some way. That's a great connection. I hadn't really thought about that as much, but again, this broader issue relates to so many things.
It connects.
Now, you're going to be doing a number of presentations for us at the Reality Sessions, first one starting, as I mentioned, September 24th and 25th here in Orange County, Southern California. And, oh, by the way, just as an aside, Disneyland is open.
I'm just
saying, for people thinking about flying in, Disneyland is open, last I heard. So you want to make a longer trip, that might be an additional appeal. And I just drove down the coast this morning on the way in from Malibu, and there are a lot of surfers out. So things are real nice right now in Southern California. Just saying, all right.
Not as that if that Southern California needs more of a lure. But
yeah, that's right. Well, it does have its own mystique, I think. So you're going to be doing a plenary session on the main stage. The title for that session is Bringing Clarity to Abortion. And a little curious about where you're going to go with that, because, I mean, what is it that you think that in a certain sense, needs to be clarified for young people regarding abortion?
Yeah, probably the simplest way to put it, especially in as things have shifted in recent months with regard to language around this. Even the term pro-life has been twisted somewhat, and we'll get into why that is and whatnot. But what I want them to understand is what it means to be pro-life when it comes to this issue and when it comes to the pro-life view that has room within it to speak to other issues very clearly and well and even beautifully. So we will talk about a little bit about our cultural moment. We will talk about the fact that there are many, many hard things that bump into the abortion issue, which in most cases, when you're having a conversation with someone, these are the areas that end up getting talked about, but not the issue itself. And so we'll talk about why abortion is wrong, and then we'll learn how to make a very clear case for the pro-life view. So these students and others who come from the youngest to the oldest will leave with some tools that they can go and use right away in conversations wherever they find themselves.
Sure. And I know that you're going to deliver on that, because I know you and I know your training. I know Scott. I know LTI and the whole thing. And they're just an encouragement with my knowledge about these kinds of things, that this is an area Christians can manage. I mean, there are a lot of issues that are very complex and they're very detailed. I mean, you think of, how do you deal with evolution? How do you deal with the problem of evil or something? How do you deal with this, that, and the other thing? And there's all these nuances in and out and whatever. But when it comes to the abortion issue, even though there are more and more, there's kind of boutique objections regarding the pro-life view, the foundation is pretty straightforward. Would that be fair to say?
It is. It's very straightforward. And when you learn I think the basic categories, then you can learn in a conversation where you need to go. And that's not to say that everything comes out scripted, because people are complex.
Right.
And this issue hurts people. And so there is a sensitivity there, an artfulness, if you will, in the tactics that you're using, to use some great STR language. but if you understand the basic categories of what's going on, then you have room to go, I hear this objection, I know where to go with that.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned something that intrigued me a second ago. You said there's a kind of a cultural moment here. Now, of course, abortion issue has been a huge issue since 1973. That was the year I became a Christian. That's been almost half a century. Okay. We're 2 years shy of a half a century since Roe v. Wade. So this has been a cultural issue for all that time. But you mentioned something about a cultural moment. Do you see a particular opening here in a certain sense? What were you referring to when you use that phrase?
I think maybe an opportunity because it is chaotic. So I think anytime that there's chaos, when someone can speak in a grounded way, then they're going to get other people's attention. What is it about that person? They seem very sure of themselves. I didn't feel attacked when they asked me the questions they asked me, or when they brought the information that they brought about this issue. I've never thought about it that way before. I think what we have here is a little bit of lack of thought, or a lot of lack of thought, when it comes to these hot button issues, given the discourse over social media through just short phrases and bumper stickers and a lot of heat. So when someone can see what's going on, and this has probably been true all along, but I feel like right now for our young people, they're hungry for this. Mm-hmm. When they can see what's going on and they can be that person who isn't going to jump to anger, or you know, the flash in the pan or anything like that in a conversation, but rather is going to be curious when someone opposes their view and begin going, interesting, because they understand it to be, for listeners who are familiar with the terms, an objective issue, something that isn't mine, something that doesn't rest on me, but rather something that either is or isn't. Abortion either is wrong because it takes innocent lives, or it's not. And so those kind of people, and these young people are kind of hungry to be those examples, the ones that I encounter anyway, they can make a real difference just by saying a simple thing, asking a simple question, putting a pebble in someone's shoe.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, it does.
Well, you guys at LTI are fabulous at graciously managing the heat. and you guys get it. It's hard. Well, maybe this would have been more true 2 months ago, or rather 2 years ago, than it is today. But I was going to say, it's hard to imagine an issue that elicits more heat than light, anger from the opposition. Now it's unfortunately the case that there's a number of issues in the cultural dialogue that can trigger an explosion from the other side. But, you know, Christians' responses still have to be the same, with grace and reverence. This is our verse on defending the faith in 1 Peter chapter 3, you know, always be ready to give an answer kind of thing, but with gentleness and reverence. And you guys over at under Scott's tutelage have been trained well to do that. And of course, you've had a lot of opportunity to be on the firing line and live that out. Now, you're going to be talking about that issue, bringing clarity to abortion, on the main stage for us at Reality, coming up in, 8 or 9 weeks here in Southern California, and all the rest of the realities as well. But you also have some breakout sessions that you're going to be doing for us. We're going to work you hard, Megan. So tell us about your breakout sessions.
Well, the one that I know I'm going to be talking about is moral relativism and how to debunk that. So even just to borrow from terms I was just using, the difference between an issue that is objectively true and one that is subjectively true, just true for the subject, just true for me. I think it's proper that I'm linking those two, because in the abortion conversation, even more so than some of the other injustices we're seeing right now, this is a big hurdle for people, because abortion is framed subjectively in our, even in our national discourse, at the, you know, the national stage, but certainly in our person-to-person discourse on a day-to-day basis, people seem to have that disconnect. Well, I understand that you don't want to have an abortion, but you can't tell other women what to do with their bodies. It has been, again, terms that have been taken and twisted. But moral relativism will apply to many of the other well, all of the other issues that we'll be talking about when we talk about our faith, when we talk about moral issues. How do we frame it in the conversation? How do we understand it to be so that we can talk about it properly? And so once we clear the air there and talk about why moral relativism is ultimately bankrupt, and I'm going to be using this great little book as a source from a guy I know called Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair, which is always the source I give, but you and Frank Beckwith wrote. I mean, you know that, I'm telling your listeners, but once we walk through that, I think that the outcome will be a lot of clarity, but also a lot of confidence. I find that when this is cleared up for people, and I usually take some time when I present on it to talk about what this ought to do to our posture in conversations, I find that young people are leaving and going, I didn't know that I could do that. I didn't know that I could claim to be right and not be being mean.
Right.
And so all of a sudden they have a newfound.
You know, Frank and I wrote that book. We wrote that book in 1998 as the first book that I was involved in. It's like published, Baker Bookhouse published it, still in play. I'm glad to hear it. I think over 50,000 books have sold, and I wish it was like 10 times more. Every author probably believes that. But I'm saying it a bit from the perspective of the need that Christians have to understand the shell game that's been going on in this area. And it was just maybe a year or two ago that Amy Hall mentioned, she said, this issue is bigger now than it ever has been. The whole relativism issue, not just moral relativism, but relativism in all of its species, so to speak. All the different permutations of relativism, the you do you mentality, and how, boy, is that a factor in the whole gender debate? It's all about the individual and what they want, and that's the crowning factor. That's what matters. What's right is what you think is right for you. And I'm really glad you're going to be teaching on that. And your husband's also doing a session, at least one, I know, right? So Tripp will come along, and I noticed in the promo material, I think I saw him with his gargantuan beard, and I saw him a few moments. He looks like a swamp guy, you know, in that picture. But I'm getting the stink eye here from Kyle, because his beard is getting longer and longer on the other side of the window here. As we speak, it's getting longer. But then he before the show, we got a chance to visit here by Zoom with your husband, and he stuck his head in, and he was all trimmed up. He looked a lot more civilized.
Yeah, so, he lost the beard. He got tired of maintaining it.
There's just all kinds of things that can get caught in it, and birds nest in it, and all right, you know. Mm-hmm. However, okay, he's going to be one of the presenters, apparently, on The Problem of Evil. So yes. Do you know anything about his presentation?
I know that just like me, he was listening to the show, this show, long before we ever got into this line of work. So he'll be talking. I think it's an issue that he really loves to come at. He gives, of course, an intellectual answer to the problem of evil, which isn't always what people are looking for. And I think he's going to talk about exactly that. So we have a satisfying answer from the Christian worldview, but because he was a pastor for 10 years, he certainly understands the depth that people go, that's not really where my struggle is with this. So he'll be able to speak to both.
Yeah, you know, that's good. But I Dennis Prager, the Jewish talk show host around the country, conservative, great friend of Christians. And he made a statement about this once that really stuck with me. And he said, when Jewish people point to the Holocaust as a great evil and ask why, they don't want to be comforted necessarily. They want an answer. Mm-hmm. They want an answer. So sometimes that so-called intellectual angle turns out to be a whole lot more important to people than we may give it credit for. So I'm glad that Tripp's going to be handling both those things. Look, I noticed we got some callers on board, and it turns out, Megan, that the first caller is calling on the issue of abortion. And so do you mind hanging on here a little bit and help me out with this one?
Sure thing.
We got the super pro on board. Let's go to break and we'll come back with Meg Allman, who is one of our premier speakers for this year's series. And our year starts like the school year, in the fall and ends in the spring. Our series of reality, and the first one, September 24th and 25th. In Orange County at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, and we are rapidly selling out. So if you want to sign up in advance up until August 1st, when you'll have the kind of early bird discount, just go to realityapologetics.com. After that, you can still sign up. It'll cost you a little bit more, not much more. It's not bad. We try to make it manageable for everybody, but we only can... 2,000 in the main auditorium and another 1,000 in various other places. We don't want you sitting in steerage. So get out there and sign up quickly. Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. Friends, if you like this broadcast, I know you'll love hashtag STRAsk. It's our shorter 20-minute podcast where I am paired with the wonderful Amy Hall, and together we answer the questions you send us on Twitter. Hashtag STRAsk is released twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays, and it's only about 20 minutes long, so it's perfect to listen to on your morning jog or while driving around running errands or cleaning your garage or just plain loafing at home. Amy and I tackle your questions on theology and ethics and culture and lots more, offering our insight on the questions you're asking or the challenges you face. You can listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your own shows. Just remember, send us your questions on Twitter using the name of the podcast, hashtag STRAsk. That's hashtag STRAsk.
Do you know that killing an unborn human being is against the law in most states? The only exception is when the mother wants her child dead and asks a doctor to kill it. Then it's legal, it's protected, it's funded by our tax dollars. And today, the freedom to choose is even celebrated. We live in a world where a woman decides whether another innocent and defenseless human being lives or dies. But is it that simple? Don't women have a right to control their own bodies? Can't many poor women not afford to have another baby? Should a woman who was raped be forced to carry the criminal's baby? It's complicated. It's chaos. But there's a solution. There's a way to make sense of the confusion. We need to anchor our thinking about abortion to reality. Then we'll see how we can help both unborn human beings as well as their born mothers who face a difficult decision. Join us for this year's Reality Conference, where we'll see how the solution to abortion will bring clarity to the chaos. Go to realityapologetics.com to get dates and locations for the Student Apologetics event of the year.
Go back at you here on Stand to Reason, giving you a piece of my mind today, and I got a little helper on the side here. By the way, Kyle, you did that on purpose, right? You know, yeah, he runs the spot for Megan Allman, who's speaking for us on that issue, the abortion issue, coming up at all of our reality sessions, but first one being September 24th and 25th in Orange County. And my little helper, I said, because our first caller has a question regarding the issue, and, you know, I'll probably have some thoughts on it, but I want to hear from Meg first. So let's go to Mark, and we don't have a location for you, Mark, but welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, man, this is cool. I've got a tag team on this. here it is. I have a situation that's really aggravating. I listen to there's a Christian radio, local Christian radio talk show in the morning. And there's been several times. I'm going to write them a letter, but there's been several times where they are talking about pro-life, and they I'm telling you what, the one gal who does most of the talk, she stated on the radio the other day that she believes that it's a person right from conception, and she's right along with all that. All right, mm-hmm. But they keep mixing this up, like this one preacher, guest preacher they had on, this dude was like kind of relating pro-life to taking care of poor people. Mm-hmm. And then they do a lot of stuff like that. And then, I mean, even the other day, they had a blood drive up around here, and they had a real good turnout, and Cal made the statement that proves that we're pro-life. And I know it's kind of hurtful, I think, because to me, I mean, I don't know, but I mean, really, when I think pro-life, the way that I talk to people, really what I mean is anti-abortion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think the message gets mixed up when they do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know how to respond, and I was wondering if you could give me some thoughts on that.
Yeah, there's probably a number of things going on here, and I want to hear from Megan first, though. Meg?
Yeah, hi, Mark, and I'm happy to hear from you, and I would be aggravated, too, I think. And just listening to your story. We've gotten a lot of flack over the last couple of years because the term pro-life has been kind of hijacked. And it's been happening more than just on this local radio show. It's been happening at the national level, too. And so time and time again, we're hearing to be wholly pro-life means that you have to be solving all of these societal ills, not just the abortion issue. And so I've even had students coming up to me in the past year or so saying kind of the same thing. They'll say, I agree with everything you're saying, but I don't want to call myself pro-life because people are going to put me in a box that I'm not in. In other words, they're going to take the term and twist it. So my advice to them is take it back. Take it back, but do it with gentleness and respect. Define your terms. There is a difference between the pro-life movement and its inception, of course, in 1973, fighting to end the injustice of abortion, which is a good and noble and worthy cause. Because if abortion is killing innocent human beings, as you and I both believe, Mark and Greg too, then it needs to come to an end. It is wrong. It is causing far more damage. And so we need to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. And the pro-life view that undergirds the pro-life movement is one that is robust enough to allow for the consistency to be able to speak to other injustices as well. In other words, when we talk about the pro-life view, and we talk about that it's grounded in science, which does tell us that from the very beginning, we are all human beings that are living distinct and whole. We also talk about the philosophical side of things that says that the only answer to the question of human equality comes when we say, hey, we are valuable in light of the kind of thing that we are, intrinsically valuable, which we would ground in the Imago Dei ultimately. But philosophically, you can go there to speak about it. You can talk about intrinsic worth and not functional value. If that's the case, that means that every human being that you meet and encounter shares that intrinsic worth. And so it's able to speak to why other injustices are wrong. But when we start saying that to be pro-life means that you must be solving all of these issues, I think we're doing more harm than good. As my boss, Scott Klusendorf at Life Training Institute would say, you know, nobody's fussing at the American Cancer Society because they're not curing heart disease while they're at it. They have a very focused goal, and that is a good thing.
Yeah. This is, when I listen to this objection, it starts to get me a little bit miffed, okay? And so I have to be careful. And the reason why it gets me miffed, and I'm sympathetic to what your friend said. She said, if I got you right, Mark, that she is pro-life, but she's afraid to say she's pro-life because she's going to be besieged by others because she's not pro-life enough. Instead of applauding her being pro-life in that issue, she's not pro-life enough in these other areas, so she gets dissed a little bit, okay? Here's my suspicion, that anybody who's going to diss a pro-lifer for that is disingenuous in their view. What they're trying to do is undermine your view of abortion, your pro-life, i.e. that abortion takes the life of an innocent human being and therefore that's wrong, because they're saying you're inconsistent. You're not really concerned about the justice regarding the unborn, because if you are really concerned about justice, you'd be doing not just A, but B, C, D, E, F, G, and H, and sometimes L, G, B, T, and Q. Okay. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep. Yeah. I know
and
what
so,
you're talking about.
Because so obviously, you know, you have a disingenuous view, or at least a really substandard, truncated understanding of justice. However, when they start talking about other areas of justice, I can now Meg, you can let me know if I'm onto something here, but I bet that almost all these other areas of justice are all the politically correct areas of justice that are being promoted. Now, look at, do they talk about people committing suicide, for example? If you're pro-life, why don't you work against people committing suicide? That's a human life being lost. Okay. Why not that? Well, that's not really so much on the agenda as the injustice done to the poor, allegedly. Okay, so that's the what they want the bandwagon they want you to climb on instead of the pro-life one. Let me tell you something. Every single time a baby is killed through abortion, a massive injustice has been done. However, that isn't the case with every person that's poor. People aren't poor because of injustice. Now, there might be some people that are poor because of injustice, but just because they're poor does not mean there's an injustice unless you're a Marxist. If you're a Marxist, then it's to each according to his ability, from each according to his need. The rich aren't paying their fair share. They should be giving it to people who don't have as much. And if they're not giving it to people who don't have as much, that's not fair or that's not just. So the concept of justice there is a lot of times hitched to a foreign worldview that has nothing to do with Christianity. You know, the poor, should we be helping the poor? Of course we should, you know, in proper measure. But just because a person is poor doesn't mean they are victims of injustice. And that is precisely the narrative that our culture, especially left of center, is screaming right now and demanding of us. And so this is why I think this objection and what makes me angry, and I'll let Meg respond because she's jumping there with everything I'm saying. This is why I think that this challenge is disingenuous. It doesn't come from people who are largely consistently pro-life because now they care for the poor because they don't care about the unborn. They're often pro-abortion. They're just faulting the pro-lifers because they're not adopting their particular creed, which is oftentimes Marxist, and following after that as an example of real justice. And it's not justice at all. Meg?
No, I was agreeing with you. It's why I'm jumping around. But that was, yes, fantastic. I also think just this is important to point out because you said this, Greg, but I'm going to say it in just plain words. When I receive this type of, I'll call it an attack, people say, oh, you're pro-life in the sense that you fight against abortion. Well, you're not wholly pro-life. And then what follows that usually is because you don't care about A, B, C, D, all the letters, right? When that's what comes out, that is a straightforward ad hominem attack, a perfect opportunity to go, how do you know that? They're making some fantastically broad assumptions about what you do and don't care about, or what you do and don't do with your resources. So there's that you can ask about and use your STR tactics that Greg's given us. Ask some good questions there.
Yeah. Does that help, Mark?
Yeah, it did. Let me just throw something in because Megan touched on it. I actually, the very first time that I had an issue with this program was they were talking about abortion, and I called in the talk show and I brought up the fact that, you know, and I was sweet. I wasn't like mad or anything. I was just joining along conversation, and I brought up using science and philosophy. And I was trying to get an explanation. And as soon as I said that, man, they shut me right down. Oh, no, I can't see myself doing that. And then, boom, I didn't even listen to the program for probably 3 or 4 weeks after that.
Were they shooting you down because they didn't like the way you were arguing for pro-life, or are you saying that they didn't seem to be interested in pro-life, they seemed to be interested in the other things they were campaigning
for? Well,
I
think they're interested in pro-life, and I see other Christians do this too. They're like, you know, I think they say, oh no, you just gotta love people, it doesn't matter. But I mean, I think they're not trying to make abortion unthinkable.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just trying to let people know that Jesus will forgive you, he loves you, and all that stuff. She may be leaning that way a little bit too, but then sometimes all the social issues and all that, sometimes I get a kind of a feeling that maybe some of them are buying into that too. It's just aggravating.
Yeah, well, you know, the forgiveness issue is really important, and I know the LTI crowd emphasizes that all the time, because we know people are burdened under the guilt, and that abortion is no less forgivable than any other sin we commit. And I know this is Megan's heart and Scott's heart and pro-lifers in general, you know. But I think this is an illicit broadly. And Mark, I'm just going to thank you for your call. Okay, buddy.
All right. Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark.
Hey, you guys have a good one.
All right. Bye. I think this is an illicit attempt, Megan, to undermine the pro-life view. It isn't to expand it. It's really meant to kind of undermine our convictions and try to drag us into some other area, which, you know, everybody's got their wheelhouse. Everybody does what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and presumably, and you are, and we are, and pro-lifers are doing what they can do. It doesn't mean they have to solve every ill of society.
No, and if anything, they need our support, not discouragement. It's a tough world out there, and they're trying to fight for the most vulnerable among us, and in doing so, to tell everyone, really, a better story about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Meg, what a treat to talk with you. And in 8 weeks, I get to see you. Now, I'm flying out tomorrow to Summit, but in South Carolina. And you're now in Colorado Springs area, right? In Manitou.
That's right. That's right.
So I won't see you tomorrow.
Not tomorrow.
You're not going to be up there?
I'll fly to South Carolina the first week of August, so the second week of that session.
Oh, I see. Well, okay. Well, I won't. Bummer. You and Tripp. I think Tripp is on the docket, too. I saw the lineup. So, and Scott's already, I think Scott's there yesterday or today or something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, glad to throw my lot in with the Summit crowd, even though you won't be there tomorrow to see. But I will see you in about 9 weeks. September 24th and 25th at our wonderful Reality in Orange County. And looking forward to seeing both you and Tripp there.
I'm looking forward to being there. Thanks, Greg.
All right, buddy. Good talking to you, and thanks
too.
So much. Let's take a quick break here. Well, let me just look. Let's do that. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll have Dayton, Ohio, and James coming up on Stand to Reason.
As a high school teacher, I always had a red pen close at hand. When I wasn't in front of my students teaching a lesson, you could find me assessing assignments, grading essays, and evaluating exams. The red pen played a crucial role in the educational development of my students. With it, I questioned their assumptions, exposed their errors, and challenged them to think critically. You see, a good teacher doesn't merely tell his students that they're wrong. A good teacher shows his students why they're wrong so they don't make the same mistakes twice. He corrects because he cares. Last year, I was scrolling through social media, and frankly, I was discouraged at all the bad thinking that undergirded much of what I was reading. Then it hit me. What if someone applied the red pen to this flawed thinking? And Red Pen Logic with Mr. B was born. In the last few months, Red Pen Logic has grown in popularity. Through our engaging and shareable educational graphics and videos, we are helping people, especially young people, assess bad thinking by using good thinking. And we have a lot of fun in the process. So here's your homework assignment. Like the Red Pen Logic Facebook page so you don't miss our next graphic. And subscribe at the Red Pen Logic YouTube channel so you don't miss a single video. Class dismissed.
Friends, if you like this broadcast, I know you'll love hashtag STRAsk. It's our shorter 20-minute podcast where I am paired with the wonderful Amy Hall, and together we answer the questions you send us on Twitter. Hashtag STR Ask is released twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays, and it's only about 20 minutes long, so it's perfect to listen to on your morning jog or while driving around running errands or cleaning your garage or just plain loafing at home. Amy and I tackle your questions on theology and ethics and culture and lots more, offering our insight on the questions you're asking or the challenges you face. You can listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your own shows. Just remember, send us your questions on Twitter using the name of the podcast, hashtag STRask. That's hashtag STRask. All righty, let's get quickly here to James in Dayton, Ohio. And James, I just came from Dayton. I was there yesterday. Were you part of the crowd?
I was. In fact, I came up and introduced myself to you prior to the engagement.
Okay.
I was the one that told you that I was listening to the podcast and heard that you were going to be in Dayton.
Oh, that's right. And you came up that right. That's right. You know, last minute. And good to talk to you again. I do remember you, James. So what's on your mind? We got about 6 minutes here. It's a little bit of a short thing, but I want to get to what you had in mind.
No problem. Actually, I wanted to kind of piggyback off what you were talking about when I was listening to that podcast, and you're talking about the discipline of the Lord.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering to myself, how would one know, aside from some kind of supernatural thing, how would one know if one was being disciplined by the Lord or whether it was just a Job situation or, you know, the rain falling on the just and the unjust.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
You know, how would one know? Or is it just a matter of when negative things happen, it's how we're processing it. So subjective versus objective type.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, but I think there's a fairly simple answer. And I'm taking discipline in this case to be training as opposed to God responding to something wrong that we did. And so there's a kind of chastisement, or at least there's that element of the training. And if you're going to be in a goofball and messing up a lot, that's pretty clear. Then when you get in trouble, God's there taking you to the woodshed or something. But largely what I was talking about in my own commentary was in Hebrews 12, about the training that God is doing in training us up in virtue and using it. And so your question is, well, how do I know when God's kind of training me here or when it's just the way things go? And here's where I think Romans 8:28 comes in, and this is where I think I talked about the passage. And here's the verse. And I want to encourage anybody listening that if you ever quote the verse, you always quote the entire thing, all right? And here's the way it goes. And it might be 8:28 and 29, but here's the way it goes. We know, that's how it starts, we know that God causes, both very important, we know that God causes everything to work for good, for those who love him, and for those who are called according to his purpose. For those whom he foreknew, he predestined to conform. He predestined that they be conformed to the image of his son. I think I got it right there. The point being, in the foreknowledge and predestined, all has to do with a particular end. It doesn't mean the whole world's predestined. It means that God is guaranteeing that he will take the things in our lives, everything in our lives, and use them for the good end of making us like Christ. So with that in mind, this is a pretty all-inclusive kind of statement. It means all things are going to work in that way. So that would be the what we perceive subjectively to be good and bad alike. The good things he's using, the bad things he's using. So it gives an impression, I think, James, that we are fully and completely in the care of God. We are fully in his hands, as it were, so that he can work his purposes through everything that happens to us to make us more like Jesus. Make sense?
Absolutely.
I mentioned about fully in his hands. It reminds me of an image that Jesus uses in John chapter 10. And he says, he's talking about eternal life now, but he says, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me, and I give eternal life to them, and they will never perish. And then he says, no one will snatch them out of my hand. Listen to the language now. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all, and no one is able to snatch them out of the Father's hand. Wait a minute. He was just talking snatching out of my hand, and now he's snatching out of the Father's hands. How many hands are holding us? Two hands. Jesus' hand and the Father's hand. And I heard one teacher when I was a fairly new Christian, I'll never forget this, he called it the divine sandwich. We are clasped between the hands of the Father and the hand of the Father and the hand of the Son. And we are safe there. No one is able to snatch them out of the Father's hand. And then the famous verse, the next one, is I and the Father are one. So this becomes a verse that speaks to the divinity of Christ, of course, and the Trinity. But that wonderful image of the divine sandwich, I really like that. And I think it applies to the discipline. We are wholly in God's hand, through thick and through thin, through good and through ill. God is there working everything for our good in the sense that He is going to work it to conform us inexorably. The word is predestined there, inexorably to be like His Son. Pretty cool, huh?
Absolutely. No, that's very good. And it's just one of those things. You know, I could go through the same kind of trial that someone who doesn't believe does, or someone who was backslidden does, but. You know, looking at the verses that you mentioned, my worldview is going to be, this is conforming me to Christ. You know, so
that's right. Well, everybody's got a different journey, and God's going to use different things in different Christians' lives. But that is a promise to Christians. It is not a promise to non-Christians, because for non-Christians, everything doesn't always work out good. It works out pretty bad lots of time. Anyway. Thank you for the call, James, and nice to hear from you again. I just talked to you 2 days ago. And that's it for this hour, friends. Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. Give them heaven, all right? Bye-bye now.